Land reform cannot be postponed any longer. This according to President Ramaphosa's advisory panel on land reform and agriculture. The panel was appointed in September last year and has released its final report looking into who should benefit, what land can be expropriated, and when expropriation with or without compensation should be applicable. AgriSA has in the meantime criticized the report, saying that if the panel's recommendations are carried out to the T, food security will be compromised. Bulelwa Mabasa, who's a member on that advisory panel, joins us in studio now for a more detailed look at what's been put forward to fast-track the country's land reform policy. Thanks so much, Bulelwa, for joining us this evening. So, as I say, you've sat on the advisory panel on land reform and agri, and you've released your final report. How rigorous a process was this over the past 9 months? And I guess, more importantly, how inclusive?
It was a very rigorous process. We undertook various consultations. We had two major colloquia, which were attended by hundreds of people from very many different perspectives. We had regional experts from regional parts of Africa. We had some global specialists. We also had smaller roundtables where we consulted widely with NGOs dealing with women, NGOs dealing with homeless people. We had roundtables with mining houses, financial institutions, and also people in the property sector. So it was a very rigorous process, but also just remembering that we were building on also available research and data. And so we were not kind of reinventing the wheel. What we did do was to, I think, progress the discussion to be a lot more nuanced and a lot more detailed.
I asked that question, and it's imperative because not everyone agrees with the kind of proposals that have now been put on the table. There have been differences in opinion and approach to land reform, even within the panel itself, to the extent that we've had now two panel members compile an alternative report with a focus on private sector solutions primarily. So surely this is going to breed, continued divisiveness on this matter, despite what's been tabled.
Sure, and I think it's important to realize that within our terms of reference, there was an expectation that we might not be unanimous, given the nature of the matter that we're dealing with. But I think it's important to emphasize that in the main, the panel was unanimous for the majority of the report, and that where there's areas of deviation, those were limited to issues around expropriation without compensation. Mm-hmm. It's also important to point out that expropriation without compensation is not the magic bullet. It is only one of various types of land acquisition by the state. We've made provision for a potential donations policy. We've made provision for states, the state making available its own land for redistribution. And the concept of just an equitable compensation also remains. So expropriation without compensation does not replace just an equitable compensation. All that we're doing is assisting in interpreting those cases where expropriation without compensation would be applicable.
Okay, so what land is open for expropriation without compensation? How defined are those parameters now?
So if you look at expropriation globally, it's a global concept. It's just a tool to allow the state to take land for public interest. The difference between the South African situation and other foreign jurisdictions is that in South Africa, we have the land reform objectives that most other constitutions do not have. So when we talk about what instances are open for expropriation without compensation, it's also important not to be too narrow and too definitive, but to provide guidelines. Those guidelines, we include land such as underutilized land, land that is hopelessly indebted, land that has been acquired by criminal means. We have added land that is also occupied by labor tenants and farm dwellers who were occupying the land for generations and generations without enjoying the rights or the tenure attached to those lands. We've also spoken about empty buildings, city buildings that require renovation for human settlement purposes. So we've given a broad scope of the type of land that is ripe for expropriation without compensation. But that does not take away that each case must be dealt with its own merits to ensure that you do not undermine economic activity, food production, and so on.
Is that not the heart of the nervousness around this all, though? Because it's a pretty fine balancing act, delivering land reform without undermining individual property rights. And one of the recommendations includes amending the constitution. Mm. So a big question, you know, on investors' minds right now is, how rife is the risk of infringing on individual property rights?
In fact, what the panel has done is we have broadened the scope of protecting rights on land and property. Our law currently recognizes individual title as a mode of holding land. We are saying broaden that scope. In other words, people that live on communal land that do not have any legal instruments that are recognizable or registrable must now be put into the fray, and that constitutes more than 65% of our population. People in urban areas that are living on informal settlements do so without any security of tenure, no legal recognition or registrability. Mm-hmm. So what the panel has done, in fact, it has not undermined individual property rights. It has actually broadened the scope of legal protection on property, not just relying only on individual title, because there's also must be recognition of the fact that people in communal areas, or there might be communities that actually prefer and understand communal ownership. There just needs to be legal clarity, and that those modes must be registrable and recognized by law.
Two aspects that are triggering alarm bells right now. One, food security. Does food security, or how rife is the risk of food security being compromised if recommendations tabled are implemented?
So I've already outlined the types of land that would be rife for expropriation without compensation within that formula. One must ask themselves, is the land being productive? Is the land providing jobs? Is the food security, and actually food security was one of the biggest issues, to say we actually need to include a diversity of skills and resources for people that are producing food, because currently our food is produced by by the minority. So food production remains at the center. Rent reform does not equate undermining food security.
Okay, that's the one. Second, very quickly, agricultural financing. Does this trigger any instability on that front?
So we've also gone into proposing a land reform fund precisely for the agricultural sector. We've also proposed the changing of the mandate of the land bank so that it actually enables those emerging small farmers from accessing credit and capital, which it does not do at the moment. And so within that fray, we recognize the importance of revitalizing the agricultural sector without upsetting what is currently working.
Well, this is a massive topic to delve into in just 8 minutes, Bulelwa, but thanks for giving us the heads up this evening and for joining us in studio. That, of course, Bulelwa Mabasa, member of President Ramaphosa's Land Reform Advisory Panel.